It's really a pleasure to have everyone back, and I hope that you had a meaningful and uplifting experience over Hanukkah. This morning's shir is sponsored by Lee and Marilyn Wallach, as well as Stephen and Miriam Wallach. Le'ilei Nishmas Matis Wallach, Matis Yehu ben Svi HaKohen, whose yard site was this past week. So what do we say after a wonderful experience of Hanukkah? I think we look at the Haftorah of this past week's Parsha, of the Kriyas HaTorah that we did for Shabbos Hanukkah. And we read from the Navi Zechariah, a line that has become very famous, where Zechariah HaNavi is told, V'nasati lecha mahalchim bein ha'omdim ha'ele, that I will put you as a mahalech, as one who walks, bein ha'omdim ha'ele, between all of these who are stationary, who are stagnant. What exactly is that a reference to? So many Mefarshim explain what exactly is intended in this pasuk, that there is one marked distinction between a malach, between an angel, and a human being. Human beings have the ability to continue to be mahalchim, to continue to challenge themselves. We progress, we refocus, we're multidimensional. However, a malach, an angel, is really a one-dimensional creation. They're stationary, they're stagnant. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God Himself, gives them one assignment. They can't do more, they can't do less. They don't have the ability to challenge themselves or to do anything differently than what HaKadosh Baruch Hu instructs them to do. We say it every day in the davening, in the Psukei Dezimra, Vayamidem la'ad le'olam, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put them in a place and they are stuck there forever. In a way, they're lucky, they're blessed to be in the atmosphere of HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the time. But in a way, there's some deficiency in being an angel, that you are not a mahalech, that you don't have the ability to continue to challenge yourself. However, we as human beings are continuously progressing, and we always continue to develop and improve and refine ourselves and have a new perspective and think differently. Just think back to the beginning of the greats of our people. Look in the very beginning of Chumash, where we're told all of the attributes of Avraham Avinu and Noach. I guess Noach came before Avraham Avinu. What are we told? Noach is tzaddik tamim haya bedorosav. Noach was a perfect person in his generation. Es ha'elokim hishalech Noach. The defining characteristic of Noach was that he was mishalech, that he was continuously walking. He was always moving. He was always a person who challenged himself and took on new responsibility. And the same goes by Avraham Avinu. We find that the instruction he's given is hishalech lefanai veheyeh samim. That is no coincidence. That is that very same word. Es ha'elokim hishalech Noach. The instruction given to Avram is hishalech lefanai veheyeh samim. Moshe Rabbeinu in the very end of Chumash says, Lo uchal od latzeis velavo. I'm unable to come and go anymore. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, lo nas lecho. He was very strong until his last day. So what does he mean, latzeis velavo? I have nothing more that I can challenge myself. I cannot be in motion anymore. I have done everything to the maximum of my potential. So then, lama li chayim, why am I here? What is the point of life if a person does not have the ability, latzeis velavo, to continue to walk and to move and to challenge themselves? That really is what our lives are all about. And this is what we mention in the Haftorah of this past week's Parsha, the Navi Zechariah, where he describes this distinction between what the characteristic of a malach is and the characteristic of a human being. I saw a very fascinating comment a number of years ago by the Shem Yishmuel in his Sefer on Chumash. He wonders, there's a pasuk that we all say, that we all know. Ko amar Hashem zacharti lachesed nu'urayich ahavas kelulosayich lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruah. So we say these words, we sing these words, we cry about these words, beautiful. But you ever thought about the words? What are these words? Ko amar Hashem, in the end of days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, zacharti lachesed nu'urayich. I remember that wonderful feeling that we had, bimei nu'urayich, when you were young, when we just met each other. You think back to your first date, you think back to the engagement, you think back to under the chuppah, what did that feel like? There's something very special about those moments. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what I'm referring to? Not to that moment of Yetzias Mitzrayim, not to that moment where we just met each other, where I took you out, where you accepted the Torah. No, what does the pasuk say? Lechteich acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruah. I'm going to love the Jewish people forever. And this is at the end of a 3,000-year galus, when God finally is Machzir Shchinasa Letzion. He says, why do I love you? What is this fond memory that I have of my interaction with the Jewish people? You know what it is? Lechtech acharai bamidbar be'eretz lo zeruah. That you followed me in the desert when it was desolate, when you didn't know where you were going, when you still were determined to follow the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now says the Shem Yishmuel, did we have another option? God put us in the desert. We were stuck. We had nowhere else to go. So he says, I'll travel with you. I'll show you where to go. Anani HaKavod, I give you the man and the be'er. What option B was there? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, I love you so much. You know why? Because you were willing to follow me in the desert. Well, you didn't give me anything else that I could have done instead. So that's not a reason to love someone. We were forced into it. And secondly, says the Shem Yishmuel, after 3,000 years of galus, is that the best that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can say about us? You know why I love you? Not because you rebuilt the Jewish people after the Shoah, and not because after everything you've been through, this is where we are, and not because after all your questions in Amunah, you still were willing to hold on strong. Nah. You know why I love you? Because you know, 3,000 years ago, we had this time in the desert together and you followed me. I mean, I think all of us can come up with better examples than that one. So why ask the Shem Yishmuel, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu so stuck on something that seemingly is so meaningless, that really does not have so much merit when you talk about the context of Jewish history and who we are and where we've been and where we are today? Explains the Shem Yishmuel, obviously that's not what it means. What the Navi means in this description is, Zacharti lachesednu raich, HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembers the following. After we had, as we say in Haggadah Shel Pesach, Bimora Gadol Zugilu Shechina, we had the greatest revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that a human being will ever have. We came out of Mitzrayim, we saw Yad Chazak of Izra HaNetuya, we felt as close as a human being can ever feel to the Ribono Shel Olam. We then had a follow-up experience by Har Sinai. Can it get better than that? And yet, you continue to say, Lechtech acharai bamidbar, I want more. I want to become closer. I don't feel that that was sufficient. Even though I saw and experienced everything that I did, and I know I'll never have that again. I won't have Yetzias Mitzrayim, and I won't have the experience at Har Sinai, but you were determined to be Lechtech acharai bamidbar, to be people who are mahalchim, to be people who continue to challenge themselves. That is the greatness of the Jewish people. And that, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is what I cherish and love about the Jewish people for all eternity, because that is what they have continued to do. To always look for a new challenge. To always look to overcome a new obstacle. To always imagine life being different. To always understand that there's what to build and there's what to grow. And that, for the history of the Jewish people, has been what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has loved about us. It's interesting that in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah says, Lo sakim lecha matseva asher saneh Hashem Elokecha. Do not construct a matseva. Matseva means a monument. Asher saneh Hashem Elokecha. God absolutely abhors those. Now the Ramban points out, it's very interesting. The Torah says in Parsha Shoftim, you're not allowed to build a matseva. Yet we find throughout Chumash that you're supposed to build a mizbeach. So a Mizbeach is the venue, it's the vehicle that's used to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Suddenly you have what seemingly would be the same thing, a Matseva, and God says, no, 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 Asher Saneh Hashem Elokecha, that's horrible, that's a terrible thing to do. Number one, says the Ramban, what's the difference between a Matseva and a Mizbeach? They seem to be the same. Explains the Ramban a practical difference. He says that a matseva is when you have one solid slab of stone that you put out on the ground. That is a matseva, a monument, a structure. HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates those. When you talk about a mizbeach, how do you build a mizbeach? Take one little stone, you put it on top of another, and after you compile all of them together, you then have a mizbeach. And that is what connects us to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Moshe Feinstein wonders, it's a very nice explanation to tell us what the difference between a matseva and a mizbeach is, but why is one of them abhorrent? Why is one of them hated and one of them is beloved? What is the difference between the two practically? Why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu appreciate one and absolutely reject the other? Explains Rav Moshe, perhaps the answer is, it's not talking about a physical structure. It's talking about a mentality, a lifestyle. There are those who live life and say, I build my monument. This is what I've done. I'm so accomplished. This is everything that I've been able to accumulate. This is the family that I've raised. These are the jobs that I had. This is the community I was a part of. This is where I invested my time and my money and my efforts. And that's what it is. Asher Saneh Hashem Elokecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no appreciation for that. What does the Ribono Shel Olam love? The people who live all of life with a Mizbeach mentality, building one stone on top of the other. Understanding that as much as we may have accomplished, whatever it is that we may have overcome, wherever we have gotten in our lives, there's another stone that can always be put on top of the one that we've built before. And that is the opportunity that we all have, so long as HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the great gift of continuing to live life. Why do I mention this? Not only because it was the Haftorah of this past week's Parsha, but also because there's a Gemara Maseches Shabbos. The Gemara Maseches Shabbos in the second parak talks about all of the halachas of Hanukkah. A very brief discussion about what kind of oils you're allowed to use, what kind of wicks you're allowed to use, and the reason why it's in Maseches Shabbos is because there, the Gemara talks about Neros Shabbos. And in the context of talking about what we can use for Shabbos candles, the Gemara then goes on to a tangent to speak about what we're allowed to use for Hanukkah candles. Are they the same? Are they different? And there the Gemara says the following statement. Hayatofus ner Hanukkah biyado ve'omed. What if somebody, instead of placing the Neros Hanukkah in a menorah, by the window or by the door, wherever you light, I stand with the menorah in my hand and I walk around with it. Now again, it's a strange thing to do, a fire hazard, not a good idea. But the Gemara says, theoretically, if a person is tafus ner Hanukkah biyado ve'omed, someone stands with the ner Hanukkah and does not put it in a stationary position somewhere, lo asa ve'lo klum, says the Gemara, you have not fulfilled your obligation of Hanukkah. The Sfasemis, I believe, writes that perhaps what this is an allusion to is, if somebody goes through the entire experience of Hanukkah, tafus ner Hanukkah biyado, you can say that I've done everything, I've lit the candles, I've experienced Hanukkah the way I'm supposed to. But after all of that, after we're done with the experience, v'omed, you're still standing in the same place where you were 8 days ago, and you have not progressed at all. And there is nothing in your mind that has challenged you to think differently about your Judaism, about your family, about yourself, about your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Lo asa v'lo klum. Then what has this holiday done for you? Do we think all HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is light the candles, sit there for a couple of minutes and walk away? Of course, the Ribono Shel Olam wants us to do that. And it's important that we always follow the halacha and do all of the technicalities that are expected of us. But beyond that, there's a message there. There's something important to take away. So I always feel after Hanukkah, we need to reflect a little bit and wonder, so what are the takeaways? It's not too late. What are the takeaways? We just celebrated Hanukkah. So what should we think about? And how do we make sure we are not that person that is tofes ner Hanukkah biyado ve'omed? How do we make sure that we are that mahalach, that we are that person who has challenged ourselves and who will continue to do so? What reflections can we have? So let me just share a few. Number one, in Parshas Bahaloscha, which is really where the Torah outlines the instruction of lighting not Neros Hanukkah, but rather the candles in the Beis HaMikdash, Bahaloscha es HaNeros. Aaron HaKohen is instructed that he is supposed to light the menorah every single day. So let's look at the words. Daber el Aaron ve'amarta elav. I'm sorry, I said let's look at the words. I didn't have a chance to put it out there for you, but let's imagine we're looking at the words. Daber el Aaron ve'amarta elav. Bahaloscha es HaNeros al mul panei ha-menorah ya'iru shivas ha-neros. Aaron is told that he should light the menorah every day, 7 sticks, 7 candles, on the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Vayas kein Aaron, and Aaron did that. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu had instructed Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Aaron, that is what Aaron HaKohen did. Now Rashi is bothered. Vayas kein Aaron, what do you mean he did it? When God tells us you should keep Shabbos, do we need a follow-up pasuk to say, and we all did what we were supposed to do? That's not relevant. What's relevant is the instruction and what we can learn from that instruction going into the future. Did we have any doubt that Aaron HaKohen actually did this? Why does the Torah have to tell us explicitly, Vayas kein Aaron? Explains Rashi from the Medrash, Lahagid shivcho shel Aaron shaloshina. This is just to tell us the great virtue of Aaron HaKohen Shaloshina, that he did not do differently than what he was instructed to do. Yeah, that's a fascinating comment, and so many have been bothered by Rashi's comment. So here you have Aaron HaKohen, the brother of Moshe Rabbeinu, a great person in his own right, a Navi, leader of the Jewish people, somebody who works in the Beis HaMikdash, a Kohen, a Tzaddik. And we were worried that maybe he changed the instruction from what God told his brother Moshe Rabbeinu directly. No, the Torah says, no, Malamed Shaloshina. I want you to know, Aaron is a really great person. Because when he was in the Beis HaMikdash and he was about to light the menorah, he could have done whatever he wanted. But he chose to follow the instructions. What a tzaddik. What a great person. So think for yourself. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to you one day, says, you know, I know you're going to find this strange, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God actually came to me and said, he has a job for you to do, only you. So I don't want anyone else doing it. I'm going to give you the exact instructions. By the way, it's not going to cost you a dime. We're going to facilitate everything. We're going to set up the menorah. We're going to buy the oil. All you need to do is go up the steps with a candle and light them. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself told you that. How proud would you be of yourself if you actually followed those instructions? Nothing to be so excited about. You did exactly as you were instructed to do. So what exactly do we mean when we give such great praise to Aaron HaKohen for doing what he was supposed to do? And the answer is given by many, but I saw in the Sefer of Rabbi Elia Meir Bluch that he suggests that perhaps the uniqueness of Aaron HaKohen was Shaloshina, that for the next 40 years, not just the next day when he did his job, for the next 40 years, Lo Shina, he did not change. He did everything exactly as he was supposed to for the next 40 years of his life. Think about it. Is there anyone in this room who can say, I know there's no one over 40, but is there anyone who can say that they have done anything consistently every single day without fail? Doesn't matter how you were feeling or what you were thinking or what was going on in your head. Is there anyone in this room who can say that for 40 years they have not veered off, even in the smallest way, from one thing that they're committed to? Right? We have some members of our community who learn the Daf Yomi. Okay, every once in a while, they have a wedding, they're up late at night, they can't wake up so early in the morning. So, they miss the Daf. What happens? Some people say, I'll make it up next time around. I didn't really finish Shas. Some people say, I'll make it up at the end of the month, all the things that I missed. How many people can say, I've taken a commitment upon myself and I have never, ever missed in 40 years? Never. So, while we're raising children, maybe it's difficult to daven every day, to make everything at the right time, daven shacharis within the right zman, say kriya shema in the right time. I want to know, for those of you who are not raising children, can you say that in the last 10 years of your life, there's no excuse once you're not raising children, no excuse not to daven every day. It's a chiyuv, it's an obligation. How many people in this room can say, never once in the last 10 years of your life, since you stopped raising your children, never once have I missed zman kriya shema? Didn't matter how late I stayed up the night before. Didn't matter how late my flight was. Or whatever it was that happened. How many people can say for 10 years that I didn't miss Zman Kriya Shema once? Once. Not because I was in a surgery. But just because I was exhausted. I wasn't in the mood. That, says Rabbi Elia Meir Bluch, is the greatness of Aaron HaKohen. Melamed Shaloshina. He was committed to something. And he was committed to that cause every single day of his life. Never wavering. In the very end of Sefer Devarim, the Pasuk says, Ha'azino ha-shamayim va'adabera v'sishma ha'aretz imrefi. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he's talking to the Jewish people in his valedictory address, he's about to be gone from this world, and Moshe Rabbeinu is sharing his most private feelings with the Jewish people. And he invokes, Hazino Hashamayim va'adabera v'sishma ha'aretz imrefi. Suddenly, he tells everyone to look up at the heavens and look down at the ground, and the Medrash wonders, what is he trying to get at? What is the intent of his bringing up the sky and the ground and the earth? What is this all about? The Medrash says, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, Emar lahem liYisrael. Histaklu b'shamayim shebarasi l'sham shechem. Look up at the sky, which I have created simply for your benefit. Shema shinu es midasam. Has the sky woken up one day and decided, you know what? We don't like to be so big. Like, maybe the sun shouldn't shine as broadly as it does. Like, it would be better if we just focused on one country. Maybe only Asia will get sunlight, and the rest of the world will be boxed out of this privilege. Has that ever happened? Oshema amar gilgal achama eni olam min hamizrach u'me'er lecha la'olam. Maybe one day the sun, you know, had a bad night's sleep, and the sun wakes up in the morning and says, I'm not interested in rising from the east. I'll do what I want. I'll rise from the other side of the world. Histaklu ba'aret shabarasi l'sham shechem, shema shinshas midasa. Look around at the world. Look around at the environment that you inhabit here on earth and ask yourself, has the world ever decided we're going to do our own thing? Shema zaratem ba'avalot samcha, shema zaratem chitim ve'hela sa'orim. Have you ever planted wheat and suddenly barley came out of the ground? Never happened. Why not? Maybe the seeds decide, I don't like the way wheat feels or looks. I don't want to be wheat anymore. I'll do what I want. I'll grow a cucumber instead. Never happened. How can that be? Shema amra parazu. Maybe an animal said, I don't want to graze in the field. I don't want my owner to work me. I'll do what I want. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has the ocean ever said, I don't want to be restricted by the banks of the ocean. I don't want to be stopped by the sand at the edge of the ocean, of the river. I'll go and do what I want to do. I want to expand myself. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is Hazinu HaShamayim Va'adabera V'sishma Ha'aretz Emrefi. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the Jewish people right before his passing, right before his demise, you want to know how to live a life as a Jew? It means to be someone who is completely committed to the cause. What does it mean to be committed? Hazinu HaShamayim Va'adabera V'sishma Ha'aretz Emrefi. You want to know how that looks? Just look up at the sky and remind yourself that not once in the history of the universe has anything changed from the way it's supposed to be. Isn't it amazing? When I don't understand anything about astrology or about how the inner workings of space work, but if you talk to people who do understand it, or at least they sound like they do, they can predict with an accuracy in how many years this is going to happen and when that's going to happen, when we're going to have a solar eclipse and a lunar eclipse, and they know this years in advance. My son has a knack for these kinds of things. He's a numbers guy. I don't know. He gets it. I don't understand any of it. He reads these books. And he can tell me exactly when the next time we're going to have one of these eclipses are. There's some kind of formulation. It's a calculation out there. And they've never been wrong. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. It's about consistency. And as we lit the menorah, of course, Hanukkah is an exciting time in many of our homes. It's an exciting time in our communities. It's a time when we celebrate our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But that's not consistency. The message of Hanukkah is B'haloscha es haneros, melamed shaloshina. Are you willing to be committed to the cause forever? Are you willing to stand up and say next Hanukkah that I was a person, melamed shaloshina, that every single day since this Hanukkah I have never missed a Zman Kriya Shema? Are you prepared to say that? I have no excuse. There is no reason that I can't say that next year. Am I prepared to stand up and say, I have never once missed a mincha. Don't come to Minyan. I've never once missed a mincha. And even in the short afternoons, when we end the day at 4:30 as the Shkia, I've never once missed a mincha because HaKadosh Baruch was important to me. And yes, going for coffee on Central Avenue is not a reason to miss it. And being at the gym every day is not a reason to miss mincha. I am committed to the cause because this is valuable to me. Am I prepared to say that to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? B'haloscha es haneros. That I am just as committed as Aaron HaKohen was, melamed shaloshina. That's a challenge to walk away from Hanukkah with, to think about something, some aspect of our life where we have a commitment, and to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, next year Hanukkah, I will be able to say with full confidence that I was just like Aaron HaKohen Melamed Shaloshina. That is something to take pride in. That is something to be very proud of. A second issue to consider is Hanukkah, as we know, even the etymology of the words is so much interconnected with Chinuch. And the Gemara talks about this in Masechet Shabbos as well. And so many drushas that we hear on Hanukkah are all about Chinuch and about how the interplay between Hanukkah and Chinuch come together. But one thing that we need to think about is the instruction that was given to Aaron HaKohen and the instruction that is given to all of us is when lighting a menorah, when lighting a candle, how long must I hold the candle there until I have fulfilled my obligation? So the Gemara says, Ad shetehe ashalheves ola me'eleha. I have to make sure that I hold it there long enough that it will now be able to stay lit on its own. There's no expectation that I'm going to stand next to my menorah with a bunch of candles and make sure they're going to remain lit. Now, the truth is that the halacha tells us, Kavsa ein zakukla, that if my candles blow out, I don't have an obligation to go and relight them. But the Magen Avraham says that is only provided that I was responsible in the way that I lit them. If I light candles and the wind is blowing and the windows are open, what did you expect was going to happen? Kavsa ein zakukla means if they unexpectedly go out, then I don't have to relight them. But if I knew they were going to go out, I didn't put enough oil in, or I don't have enough wax in the candle, or I open the windows and the wind is blowing, then of course I have an obligation to continue to light them. So our obligation is not just to light a candle, but to make sure that the candle that is lit is able to remain lit on its own. When it comes to Chinuch, Rav Soloveitchik wrote that this is the critical component about Chinuch as well. How do I know when I have successfully transmitted my Chinuch ideals to my children? How do I know that I have been successful in my mission of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu entrusted me with in the area of Chinuch? The answer is, Ad shetehea shalheves ole me'eleha. Until my children can stand on their own two feet and make the right decisions and have the proper values. And if they still can't do that, then it means I have not set them up for success. It means I have not given them enough fuel. I have not given them enough oil to be able to withstand the challenges that they are going to face in their lives. And that is important to think about when we come away from Hanukkah as well, to consider where we are holding in our obligation, in our sacred obligation, of being mechanech the next generation. And especially, I was thinking so much about the Magen Avraham, where he says, where you light your candles outside with the wind blowing, if those candles go out, you need to relight them. The halacha of kavsa ein zakukla does not apply there because there was not a fighting chance that your candles could have stayed lit, and therefore you have not fulfilled your obligation. Do we have a fighting chance putting our children out in the street today without giving them the tools? When the winds are blowing, when the winds are howling, when there are hurricanes outside, do we have a fighting chance that our children will be able to have enough fuel to stand up and be able to live lives the way they're supposed to? That is our obligation. I remember a number of years ago, there was a family that came to talk in my home when Rav Asher Weiss was here, and they had a child that they were struggling with very significantly, and they wanted to have a perspective. And the way he opened up the meeting, I thought I was going to faint. He started off and he said, you know, there's a famous American saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. I'm thinking, how insensitive can a person be? They're here to talk about their very troubled child, and that's your first way of introducing the conversation. So he said, although it's true the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, the Chafetz Chaim once said, when there's a hurricane outside, the apple falls miles away from the tree. And you need to realize that we're living through a hurricane. There's a hurricane outside. And our children may fall miles and miles away from the tree where we planted them. And we need to realize that when there's a hurricane, all kinds of things can happen that are out of our control. The takeaway from that is, yes, there's a hurricane outside. I was so excited that I just got two emails. I haven't responded to them yet. One was from Rutgers University, and one was from University of Pennsylvania. And the students on both of those campuses asked that I come visit. They both wanted me to come for a Shabbos, which is not going to happen, but if they're listening, they'll hear. But to come and give chizuk. You know, I'm asked to speak in many different places. I can't make it to everywhere. But I would invest a considerable amount of time to go to students on a college campus. They're living in the hurricane. They are the hurricane. And to give chizuk to students who are trying to do whatever they can to stay strong as a group, to retain Jewish identity, to remain true to their values and at their core of who they are, yes, I would drop anything else to be able to do that, because that's where the hurricane is. And that's what we need to focus on as we think about Hanukkah and Chinuch and where we have taken ourselves and how good a job we have done. We need to think a little bit about that expectation of Ad Sheteheya Shalheves Ole Me'eleha. Have we made sure that our candles, that the people who we are Mechanech, are able to stand on their own and make their own light in this world without our assistance, without our hand-holding? That's what Chinuch is all about. And that's another takeaway that I think about at the end of Hanukkah as well. Hanukkah, as we know, is a very unusual Yom Tov because it was one of the only ones that we celebrate a miracle that happened in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash, in Eretz Yisrael. Pesach was outside, Shavuos outside, Sukkot was outside as they were traveling in the desert. Purim was a Galus holiday. But here we are in the exile and we're celebrating Hanukkah. And I think a very important takeaway is that although we are in Galus and although we are not in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm sure, Amir Tashem, we should have the opportunity and the aspiration to want to be in Eretz Yisrael, but as of now we are not, and we're here. And you think about Hanukkah, and we still celebrate it here, just consider the contrast. Like I mentioned last week, you know, I was in the vice president's house. It's very nice that they want to celebrate Hanukkah. Her husband is a Jew who's married to an African-American woman. Intermarriage, what? Who's not Jewish. And you're celebrating Hanukkah, which is the fact that we overcame assimilation and intermarriage. So it's a very confusing gullus that we live in. It's not so simple. It's a complicated set of values that are being put in front of us. It's hard to make sense of all of this. But yet here we are in gullus and we're still celebrating the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed us to overcome all those who were against us. And I think the message of that is that even when we're not in a Beis HaMikdash, we need to remember, as the Pasuk says in Parshas Vayigash, Anochi Eridimcha Mitzrayma V'Anochi A'elcha Gam Alo. It is not a coincidence that this Parsha is always read around the time of Hanukkah, Miketz Vayigash. This is the story of the Jewish people being exiled. It's the story of the Jewish people going into the wilderness, not knowing what's going to be in front of them. It's the confusion of Hanukkah. It's the conflicting values that are put in front of them as they enter into Mitzrayim, and that is the values that we are conflicted with today. It's the same. And Yaakov Avinu is hesitating. He doesn't want to go. I'm living in Israel. Who wants to leave? And the answer is HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Anochi Eridimcha, don't worry. I will be there with you. So although we don't celebrate Hanukkah in Eretz Yisrael, because we are here, we have the opportunity to remind ourselves, Anochi Eridimcha Mitzrayma, V'Anochi A'alcha Gam Alo, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here with us in our Mitzrayim, and He will be with us when we return, B'Shuvcha L'Tzion B'Rachamim as well. The Medrash gives a very beautiful mashal in the Mechilta. Mashal Melech Shehalach Beno L'Medina Sayam. When you have a prince goes traveling around the world, a lot about that in the news recently, right? So you have, or a former prince, maybe it's not the right example, but you have a prince who's traveling around, V'Yatza Achara V'Amad Alav. What does the king do? He allows his son to just travel by himself. He knows it's not safe. But his son wants to go touring. His son wants to go explore the world. He wants to expand his horizons. So what's he going to do? Because it's not safe, he's going to stay in the palace his whole life? Then he'll really have no understanding of life or the world. So what does he do? He goes traveling. And of course, the king keeps a watchful eye on him. He sends a group of soldiers who are going to protect his child. Halach l'medina acheres. After he's finished traveling there, he decides to go somewhere else. V'yatza achara v'amed alav. And there again, the king makes sure that he's going to be set up and have everything that he needs to make sure that he can be well protected. Kach Yisrael, so too the Jewish people, throughout every stage, in every phase of Jewish history, through all the complications and difficulties, kishiyardu l'mitzrayim shechina imahem, when they went down to Egypt, the Shechina was with them. When they came back from Mitzrayim, Shechina imahem, yardu l'yam, when they were in the middle of the sea, as they were about to drown, Shechina imahem, yatzu l'midbar, when they went out to the desert again, Shechina imahem. And this has been the story in the history of the Jewish people ever since. There's an amazing observation made by the great Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha Mitvinsk, where he writes, you think about Yaakov Avinu, and everything that Yaakov Avinu did in his life was based on the traditions that he had from his father and his grandfather. That's the way he led his life. He looked back at what his father did. He looked back at what his grandfather did. He remembered the stories. And yet, we have something that happens to Yaakov that did not happen to either Avram or Yitzchak. His first encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When was that? When he falls asleep, and b'maros halayla, in the middle of the night, he has this vision, and he sees some kind of amazing imagery. V'hine malachei Elokim olam v'yardim. He sees angels going up and going down. Hine, says the Meshech Chachma, etzel Avram v'Yitzchak lo matzanu zeh. We don't find this phenomenon by his father or his grandfather. Avram Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu, did not go to sleep and then see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their sleep. Yaakov Avinu has this revelation only while he's sleeping. Why is that? Coincidental? Explains the Meshech Chachma, Hayne mipnei shehaya muchan latzeis l'chutza l'eretz lagur. He was about to leave Eretz Yisrael. Let's remind ourselves, when he had this vision, he was a refugee. He was running for his life. He's about to leave Eretz Yisrael and he falls asleep. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him. And the Ribbono Shel Olam comes and he says, Laharos, I want you to know, She'af b'layla b'cheshvas ha'galos, in the darkness of your night, as you go out of Eretz Yisrael and you're going into the wilderness now for the first time in your life, I need you to know that Shora HaShechina b'Yisrael. I need you to know that I will be there with you. This was not relevant to Avram or to Yitzchak. Most of their lives they lived in Eretz Yisrael. It was relevant to Yaakov, who so much of his life was going to be spent in the darkness without having that vision. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu needed to emphasize to him that you, Yaakov Avinu, are going to have the opportunity to feel the Shechina wherever you are. Aaron HaKohen lit the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. We now light the menorah in our homes, because our home is meant to be a Beis HaMikdash. Our home is meant to be a place where the Shechina is comfortable. You know that Rashi says, when Yitzchak Avinu was finding a wife, so Rashi says, he brings this woman into his home and suddenly three things once again reappear. Three very important items in his life that he remembered from his mother, Sarah Imenu. What was that? It was Ner Dolek Me'erev Shabbos, Me'erev Shabbos. It was a Bracha Metsuya Be'isa. And it was also the Anan, the cloud of Kedusha that hovered over the tent. And all of those were gone after Sarah Imenu passed away, and suddenly they came back once Rivka came into the picture. It's not coincidental that on Friday night when we say in the Mishnah, Al Shalosh Haveros Nashim Mesos B'Shas Leidasan, there are three things that a woman needs to be careful about, because those can potentially be dangerous at the time of childbirth, which is a very precarious time in a woman's life. And we know it's very dangerous and so many things can go wrong. And what are those three things? Nida, Chala, V'Hadlaka Saner. Those are the three things that Yitzchak Avinu saw by his mother. Chala is a reference to Bracha Metsuya Be'isa. Hadlaka Saner is what we say, that it was a ner dolek me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. And when we talk about the Anan Kasher al ha'ohel, about the Kedusha that enveloped the tent, that is what it means, Hilchas Nida, Taras HaMishpacha, is to bring purity into the home. Why all of that? Because all of those remind us of what was in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a menorah that had the candles lit, candles burning all the time. There was a shulchan that had the lechem hapanim at all times. And there was a cloud of Kedusha in the Beis HaMikdash. But the takeaway message is that all of our homes are supposed to be that as well. A replica of the Beis HaMikdash. And we need to imagine that that's the kind of home we can be living in. Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu comfortable in my home? Is the Ribono Shel Olam comfortable with the conversations in my house? Is the Ribono Shel Olam comfortable with the things that I watch in my house? With the things that I do in my house? With the respect that I have or don't have for my children, or for my spouse, or for my relatives? With the way I interact with other people on the phone? With the way that I react when I hear about certain things? That's what all of our homes are. And Hanukkah gives us the opportunity to remember, yes, we light candles in our own home because we are in the place of Aaron HaKohen. So long as we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, we need to stand in the place of what that represented. Let me just close with one final point, and that is Rav Kahaneman, the Panavizhe Rav, wonders that on Hanukkah we say Al HaNisim, and as we think about all the miracles, Rabim biyad meyatim, Timeim biyad tahorim, Rishayim biyad tzadikim, an amazing story of victory in so many different ways. So number one, Rav Nevenzahl writes in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, how interesting it is that when we talk about the Al HaNisim, there's a major contrast between Hanukkah and Purim. We say Al HaNisim in both. At the end of the statement about Hanukkah, we say, V'kavu shmonas yimei Hanukkah elu. As a result of this whole amazing story, we now have 8 days of celebration of Hanukkah. Lahodo sulahala l'shimcha hagadol. On the other hand, when we talk about Purim, how do we end off the statement? V'salu osovi esbanav ala eitz. The upshot of everything that happened was, Haman was killed. That's like a very stark contrast to the bottom line of Hanukkah. Bottom line of Hanukkah is, V'kavu shmonas yimei Hanukkah elu. Lahodo sulahala, beautiful, a yomtiv. The upshot of the Purim story is, and we killed Haman and all of his children, and everyone lived happily ever after. So why is that? Explains Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, what you need to realize is, in each instance, we try to highlight and focus and feature that which our enemy tried to do to us. On Purim, it was unequivocally clear that Haman bikesh lahashmid laharog la'abedes kol ha'yehudim minar ba'ad zaken. He wanted to destroy the Jewish people. You know what the response to that is? V'salu osoves banav ala eitz. Not only were we not destroyed, he was destroyed. What's the focus of Hanukkah? Focus of Hanukkah was lahashkicham torasecha. Let's destroy Jewish identity. You know how we combat that? We institute more mitzvos. We are now going to institute another 8 days on the calendar where we have to make more brachos, where we have so many halachos to be aware of. You try to make us forget what Jewish identity is all about. Jews all over the world are going to light Hanukkah candles and make a bracha for all eternity. That's the response. Coming together to learn Torah is the greatest response to Lahashkicham Torah Secha. Coming off the heels of a Hanukkah and the very next morning, this is where we all find ourselves. Learning Torah, connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is the response to Lahashkicham Torah Secha. And that, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, is why we find this. But when you look at the Al HaNisim, we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the great miracle. And it obviously was a miracle, but yet, one of the things that we thank the Ribono Shel Olam for is Al HaMilchamos. Thank you so much for the war. Now, it's a little bit strange. We are not a bloodthirsty people. We don't like to be engaged in battle and bloodshed. Hostility is not our thing. Combat is not what we stand for. The Torah says, Derachei Darchei Noam. We're supposed to live peaceful, calm lives. Lo Yisa Goya Goycher V'lo Yilmadu Od Melchama. What is the vision in the end of days? That nobody's going to fight anymore. Lo Yisa Goya Goycher, we'll all get along. V'garza Evin Keves. Everyone will just be able to live in peace and harmony. That's what the Nevi'im ascribe for the utopian life of a Jew. So we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al HaMilchamos. We thank the Ribono Shel Olam, not just for the victory, not just for all the miracles that we experience, but for the war? Who's happy? Who's proud about the fact that we had to engage in battle? Explains the Panavizhe Rav, perhaps that we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for is the fact, as he writes, Al etzem ha'uvda she'ano nelchamim. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fact that we still have the determination to fight the good fight, to fight for what the Jewish people stand for. This is not thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a melchama thousands of years ago. It's not relevant to my life. What's relevant to my life is the fact that the Jewish people are fearless, that they have the stamina and the courage to persevere, to stand up for their values and principles. Ala melchamos means we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this generation for giving us the determination to fight for what we know is right, to live lives that we know are different from everyone else around us. V'chaye olam nata b'sochenu. Baruch Hu Elokeinu shebrana l'chvodo. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for allowing us to appreciate who we are, what we stand for, and what's worth standing up for in this world. So I came across this a sefer called Matok Ha'or. It's by a big darshan in Bnei Brak. He has tons of svarim. He keeps on coming out with new volumes. I can't keep up with them, so I went back to one of the older ones, all about Hanukkah, and I saw something in there, which was a mashal from the Dubna Magid. He doesn't say in which sefer it can be found. I have not been able to locate it, but I trust him. And he gives the following mashal. I'm sure the Dubna Magid doesn't give it in this descriptive detail. He sometimes exaggerates in a very beautiful way when he speaks to try to bring out his point. So he quotes the Dubna Magid, gives the following mashal. There was a Kafri Echad, there was a very simple person who lived in a certain small community. And he was told by his friends, this person was a water carrier, a schlepper in town. He never went out of his Dalet Amos. He never left the small town. But his friends used to do business in other communities. And they told him, you know, there's this amazingly new phenomenon. You will be blown away when you see this. He says, tell me, what is it? You know, we all went to the big city. Just sit down when you listen to this. You're not going to believe it. There's this new thing that the big cities have. It's an agala, it's a wagon that's able to move without any horses pulling it. What we call a train. He says, what does that mean? So how does it go? We have no idea. We have no idea. But I'm telling you, we were in the city and we saw that there's a wagon that is moving and there's nobody pulling it. And it's amazing. We hope someday you'll have the opportunity to go see it for yourself. He's so excited, but he doesn't have any money. So he decides for the next couple of years, he's going to start saving a few pennies every week to be able to someday go and visit the city and see what it is. His friend said, look, you're going to have to save more than that because it also costs money to get onto this wagon. So he's saving up and he's saving up and he doesn't know what he's in for. And finally, after a couple of years, he's so excited. He tells his family, you know, I'm sorry that I have to leave you, but I've been looking forward to this moment for a couple of years already. I've been saving up all this money under the mattress. Now I'm going to go. I'm going to take all of it. I'm going to go see this amazing, miraculous phenomenon of this wagon that moves without anybody moving it. So he gets to the big city and he asks them, does anybody know where this wagon is? They're all looking at him like he's insane. What wagon are you talking about? He says, they told me that his wheels somehow it moves. They said, what, the train? He says, yeah. Well, the train station is over there. They all direct him to the train station. He goes. He's excited by the bustling city. He gets to the ticket counter and he sees everyone's buying their tickets. Comes his turn and he is asked by the clerk, so tell me, what kind of ticket would you like to purchase? And he looks at him dumbfounded. I don't even know what that means. Well, he starts explaining to him, we have first class, we have business class, we have economy, we have lower than economy. You know, we have all different stuff. And I want you to know, by the way, in the back of the train, people come on with their chickens and their cows. They have to move it from one city to the other. So you have to decide where you want to sit. Man says, look, I've never been on this thing. I'm here. I have no idea what the difference is. How about look at how much money I have and decide what kind of ticket I should buy? So he puts all the money down on the counter. The man says, you have thousands of pennies. You should buy a first-class ticket. That will be an amazing trip for you. Pays all this money, gets his first-class ticket. He asks this individual, where am I supposed to be? He says, you got to stand over there by the track. When the train comes, everyone's going to go on. That's what he does. He stands amongst all the people and he sees the train pulls up. He's so amazed by what he sees, he can't get over it. And he notices there's a huge commotion and everyone starts aggressively pushing each other to get in. They don't want the doors to shut. He pushes along with them. He gets himself in and he's standing there looking around and he's so excited by all the hustle and bustle on this train and everyone's talking to each other and screaming and yelling, playing music and whatever they're doing. And suddenly, nobody told him that the train is actually going to make him fall down because he's not holding on to anything. He didn't take a seat. He's standing there. He topples over as the train starts moving. He starts screaming, what's going on here? People say, take a seat. Just sit down. Okay. He sits down. He's enjoying this ride. He's looking out the window. Suddenly, one individual on the train shouts to the rest of the members of the train, the conductor's on its way. Everyone quickly hide. He doesn't understand. He thinks this is part of the chavaya. We play a game while we're on the train. So suddenly, six people stuff themselves into the bathroom, and a couple of people hide under the seats. He doesn't know exactly where to go, but he's playing along with everyone else. And he goes in between the chickens and the suitcases, and he lies down on the ground. The problem is he's too tall, and his legs are sticking out. Ticketmaster comes around, asking everyone for the tickets. Half of the train is emptied out. And suddenly, he comes to this man whose legs are sticking out from his hiding spot. And he starts beating him. And the man says, why are you beating me? He says, well, I'm coming to look for the tickets. Why are you hiding? Because that's what everybody else is doing. What do you mean that's what everyone else is doing? People are hiding because they don't have tickets. Do you have a ticket? Of course I have a ticket. How else would I get on the train? Show me your ticket. Shows him the ticket. He says, you fool. You have a first class ticket and you're hiding with the chickens and the cows under a suitcase. What are you hiding for? Go to first class. They serve you meals. There's a button next to your seat if you need anything. People will come immediately to help you. They'll walk on with your suitcases. They hold everything for you. What are you, crazy? You're here rolling in the mud in the back of the train with all the lowlives here. You have a first-class ticket. What are you doing? So the Dubna Magid told this mashal. And he said, think about the world that we live in. And ask yourself, am I living a first-class spiritual life? You were given a first-class ticket. You paid a very heavy price for that ticket. 3,000 years of Jewish persecution was the price that we paid for this ticket. And now we're holding on to the ticket, says the Dubna Magid. And instead of appreciating the privileges of what it means to be banim lamakom, of what it means to be people who have a seat in first class, who can live a life above the silliness, the nonsense that goes on around us, we choose to hide with the chickens and the cows underneath the suitcases in the back of the train, thinking that this is part of the chavaya, not realizing that what makes life valuable is when you take advantage of the tremendous price you have paid for where you are today. As we think about Hanukkah and the takeaways, and we have the ability to consider what the Panavizhar Rav said about Al HaMelchamos, thanking HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day for the courage to stand up to this fight, for the courage to stand up for what the Jewish people are all about, for the courage to realize that we all have a first-class ticket, that we all have the ability to hold on to everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put in our lives and all that He aspires for us. It's all there. And instead, so often we see how Jews do not have the ability to appreciate what their heritage stands for, who they are and what they represent, that they are the Am HaNivchar, that they are the chosen people, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to be His Banim LaMakom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to stand up for what's right in the world, Not that anyone else may not, but we certainly have to. And that, says the Dubna Magid, is something to think about as we consider what it means, ala melchamas, what are we fighting for? What was that melchama back then, and what does it mean when we translate it into 2022? How exactly does that melchama look? It's not about bloodshed. It's not about killing people. It's not about hostility. It's not the kind of people we are. It's about understanding that we are engaged in an ongoing melchama. It's a melchama against all that is evil. It's a melchama against all that is impure. It's a melchama against all that we know is not right in the world. And it's a melchama for ourselves, for our community, for our children. Will we be strong enough to know that as we lit our candles, as we are mechanech the next generation, are they strong enough to stand up against the hurricane that is out there in the world confronting them? It's the challenge we all face. It's the challenge and the commitment we all need to make, that we will do whatever we can to make sure that our community is strong, that our values will be upheld, and that this Hanukkah did not go to waste. Kala tofes ner Hanukkah biyado ve'omed lo asa ve'lo klum. Wishing everyone a wonderful